I would like to invite everyone to pick up your last bit of goodies and come sit down. I'd actually like to start by reading to you some verses from Matthew 25, starting in verse 31, but skipping some verses. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit upon his glorious throne. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me." And then moving down, and the king will say, "I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these of my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me." So in 2007, Jenny Schantz was one of the co-founders of Inner Hope Youth Ministries. And this is a ministry that really exists in East Vancouver to give support and care to youth who are at risk of homelessness. And our church supports this mission. And really, this mission is our church's opportunity to fulfill what Jesus was talking about in Matthew 25, about caring for the least of these, who are actually right in our backyard. So I'm very excited today that Jenny is able to be here to tell us about the ministry, give us updates. And I'd like to invite you to come up now, and I'll just pray for you. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the burden that you placed on Jenny's heart all those years ago, and the way that you have used this organization to reach some of the least of these in our city. And now I pray that you be with her, give her the words to say, and give us the ears to hear what you want us to hear. Amen.
Amen. Well, it's always good to be back. It still feels a bit like a home church for me, so I think that's a sign of how well you do family in this congregation. And I know that Carla would also want greetings shared with you. I don't know if many of you have stayed in touch with her, but her and her husband and the six kids they are raising have moved to Chilliwack, actually, in June. So her husband works in Abbotsford, and it cuts the commute down, so, but yeah, we're still in regular contact, because the six kids they're raising have extended family that Inner Hope serves, so, so Inner Hope Youth Ministries, many of you have watched our journey over the years. We walk alongside youth and families in East Vancouver, as Carrie mentioned, nurturing hope, belonging, and transformation through support, discipleship, life skills, and housing. In the Bible, Jesus calls us to not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And today I'm going to be focusing in on the topic of justice. And I was debating between whether to go into more of the core piece of my message first and then share a few stories, or whether to share the stories first so that you have some context. I decided to go with the stories first. So we do have a few little videos that came out about 7 or 8 months ago that highlight how each of our service areas addresses some of the needs among our youth and families. And all of our program, all of what we do is, the foundation of all of what we do comes from four main values. One is faith, one is committed relationships, one is community, and one is integrity. And so as you watch each of those four videos, maybe think about how those values of faith and committed relationships, community, integrity, you know, may be a foundation for each of those service areas. So I'll maybe go to... Actually, if you're able to flip through the slides, so keep going there. We'll go on to the next one is, support. So the first area is just kind of a catch-all. It's often when we first engage, it's because a young person or a family member has been invited to a community event, or they maybe have a need. We may go out to the hospital to visit somebody, or be asked to be an advocate for somebody in a vulnerable situation. And so if you could play the video that comes after that.
So like 5 years ago, I would say, you know, even though I had housing and everything like that, I was very unstable. You know, I was still allowing people to come in and out of my house. You know, I was still drinking a lot and going to a lot of parties, even though I was like a parent. Fast forward 5 years, here I am now. You know, I'm not drinking. I'm home with them every night. I think that the support from you guys and the way that, you know, just watching the way that you guys live, it's a big role model for me. You know, they're there as a mental support when I need it. If I want to vent to anybody, they're just always there, willing to text me or call me and talk with me and just like go for coffee. I think that I'm a better mom because of it, right? You know, you guys are there through like my hardest and darkest times. And that, you know, you guys let me know that I'm not alone and that, like, you know, mistakes happen, things happen, it's life. And, you know, just because something, I'm having an off day, you guys still, like, love me the same, which then I'm able to relate that back to my children. If they're having a bad day, you know, I can still love them and, like, you know, nurture them the way that I need to.
When families are caught in cycles of systemic trauma and addiction, often they don't have parents that they can rely on to be there, even for practical things like teaching them how to drive, like you saw in that video, if families don't have vehicles and don't have that experience. But it's just being... Yeah, sometimes there's parents who are dead already because of drug overdoses or other things, or that are just not in stable places. And so we have the honor of stepping in and being a part of individuals' lives, and sometimes for a long journey from childhood into adulthood. So the next area is discipleship. And yesterday, we just had a group of kids come back from a week of summer camp at Camp Quanos, and today we have 21 youth going to youth camp at Camp Quanos. And so far, each week that kids have gone, kids have come to faith, kids have grown in their faith. The little junior campers, 8 to 11-year-olds, I arrived to pick up a group of them up at the ferry terminal, and two of them had hardcover Bibles that they were reading. On the, like, literally, there at the ferry terminal, and they were so excited. One of the boys left almost all of his clothes, his bathing suit, his towel, but he had this Bible that he had purchased himself from the tuck shop. It was one of the few things that made it back. And to see an 8-year-old so excited about reading his Bible, and as I'm driving them back, I said, "What was the highlight of your week?" One of the boys, about 10 years old, said, "The love and friendship." And the other said, "The speaker." And we're talking like 8, 9, 10-year-old boys here. And it's just been amazing. We've really seen God at work this summer. So I'm going to let you show the next video there.
Through Inner Hope, my faith has been strengthened by many different people, one of them definitely being my mentor, John. And he picked me up once after I made some bad decisions, and I talked to him about it, and he never changed the way that he saw me. He saw me the same, he talked to me the same, and he still saw me as an equal. And I was absolutely surprised in that, and that's when I knew that that was God's love. Inner Hope has supported my journey as a Christian through their constant persistence in inviting to church and other programs. Inner Hope got me connected to Bible camps simply just by invitation. And I remember going to the Capricornos for the first time ever, and I remember being accepted by the staff as one of their own. Because of that, my faith has been strengthened so much because I've learned how to love others the way God wants us to love others, and that's all I could have ever asked for. The next adventure with God that I see is another summer at camp, and from that camp, studying His Word.
Well, I'm excited to tell you that Richard is just finishing his summer at camp, so he's going to have some of our youth this week in his cabin. And he's been accepted into Cape and Ray Bible School in Sweden, actually. There is a foundation that's offered our youth a scholarship to cover almost all of their tuition if they go to Cape and Ray, a Cape and Ray school. And so he's the second young person that's been able to go to Bible school. And he his visa application got approved, I think, a week or two ago, and he's due to leave in a couple of weeks. So Richard's heart is to become a youth pastor and to be able to come alongside young people that, that have gone through a lot of what he's gone through. So keep Richard in your prayers. The next area is life skills. And, you know, I mentioned that there's often intergenerational cycles of trauma, addiction. You know, young people have been in and out of the foster care system. And so often that makes it hard to, you know, through your teen years when you're focused more on day-to-day, what am I going to eat, and looking after siblings, you know, you're not as, often it impacts development. And that can be just through getting through school. It can impact accessing things like having their IDs and opening bank accounts and finding their first job and learning how to cook and budget and those kinds of things. So part of our mentoring for teens is matching them one-on-one with a mentor who can come alongside and, when opportunities arise, be able to support young people to learn those things that often our parents would teach us. So, and then in our young adult years, so what we were finding was the biggest obstacle was for, you know, the 19, 20-year-olds. So the teens also have a safety net at high school and school counselors and support workers, but once they're 19 or 20, they often have less support with the pressure of being able to help provide for themselves. And so we have a post-secondary coordinator who supports our 19 to 24-year-olds. There's a mom who's going to share a bit in the next video, and she, you'll notice that it talks about her being a fourth-generation residential school survivor. Is there anyone here who understands what that means? Okay, a few of you. Okay, so in Canada, you may be aware that part of colonization was the government and churches partnering to have residential schools in our country. And I think by the 40s, it was government law that all Indigenous children be taken from their families. And at one point, 60% of all Indigenous children in our country were in these schools. So when she says she's the fourth generation residential school survivor, that means her great-grandparents were taken away as children and institutionalized. Her grandparents were taken away as children and institutionalized. Her parents were taken away as children and institutionalized. And then she also was taken away as a child and institutionalized. So if four generations were removed from family at age 5 or 6 years old, that means there's no living memory of parenting children in the community that she came from. Which you can see would have massive ramifications in being able to function as a parent. And so for many of our families, this is a legacy that they've had to endure. Often in communities, you know, there might have been one or two or three generations, but in some cases, there were four or five generations. And so I'm going to let Sandra's, story.
Inner Hope has impacted my kids and my grandchild, helping them get into a private school, St. Regis, and it was truly a blessing because my kids were behind. Now they're given the opportunity to get into university, whereas before, if they would have stayed at the high school where they were at, I don't think they would have got in. I'm the fourth generation of residential school survivor. I lived a screwed up life and I want a better life for them. I think it's important for them to learn life skills so they don't have to be on Hastings for one thing, which I was there for many years. I want them to know a different lifestyle than my lifestyle. With the Inner Hope community, I really like that they have after school programs so that my kids are not hanging out and being bored and getting into trouble. I'm a single parent, right? And so I need all the help that I can get, especially positive role models. There can be like negative role models out there, but it's just like, I know that they're in safe, my children are in safe hands when they come to Inner Hope and they're learning all sorts of new things and neat things. Yeah, they really love Inner Hope.
Okay, and the last one is housing. So many of you know that we do have a home that can be a resource for up to 4 young people. And so it's located on just off of Knight and 33rd. We actually just had new house parents move in on a week ago. And she, Georgia and Francis, Georgia is studying at Regent College. They are from Uganda and Kenya. And they are very excited to be living in the home with the young people. They actually have a 21-year-old son that they've raised who's in law school in Kenya. And so they have experience raising a teenager and young adult. They've also taken in a few young people over the years, like in Kenya, that needed places to stay. So that idea of having young people stay with them is just almost normal to them, and so we're extremely excited to journey with them, have them a part of our team in this next season. And so, yeah, we in a year we serve, you know, close to 250 individuals, but the home is a resource for 4 young people at a time. Our goal is that they stay in the home for 1 to 3 years, so that it's long enough that they can really gain just new skills and learn how to have healthy boundaries in a home, and how to and kind of be able to further their education and employment while they're with us, so that they're more able to sustain living on their own when they leave. So I'll let you play the video of the home.
Right before I moved in, I was living in Surrey Memorial Hospital. I had some mental health issues, and that's when the cops brought me in. Before I left the hospital, I had to have a safe place to go to. But then I found the home through my social worker, Chris Rembrandt. So where I was before, I was like a street entrenched kid, just like not really doing well for himself. Life was up and down a little bit, from living on the streets to being in and out of safe houses. It was kind of a little bit rough, so. The first day was awesome. I had a banner with my name on it and some balloons tied to it that Irene made for me. Because I've been able to have a place to stay here, my mental health has gotten better. I got a job. To everybody that's given money to provide for this home, I'd like to say thank you.
So Tristan's now lived with us for a year and a half, and he's definitely a joy to have in our community. So Micah 6:8, the reference isn't there, but it's from Micah 6:8, it says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." And I looked up some definitions for these 3 key words. Justly, so in a just manner, honestly and fairly. Mercy, compassionate or kindly forbearance shown toward an offender, an enemy, or other person in one's power. So that's something shown to someone that doesn't necessarily deserve it or have earned it. Humbly, not proud or arrogant, modest, to be humble although successful. So somebody who could be in a position of power, but they lower themselves. Philip Yancey says, whatever makes us feel superior to other people, whatever tempts us to convey a sense of superiority, that is the gravity of the sinful nature, not grace. You know, sometimes when we walk the streets and we see people in addiction, if you've walked through the downtown east side, I actually spent an hour and a half down there a week and a half ago because a social worker couldn't find one of my kids. Just connected with about 9 young people that I have gotten to develop a good relationship with over the years. And it's hard to see many that really end up really end up struggling, you know. But even when you're seeing them in that state, like, they just have a way of still being able to love on you. One of the boys just said, you know, I think I'm just going to walk with you. And he'd walk, and every time I stopped to chat with somebody for 5 or 10 minutes, he'd just stand patiently, and then we'd go on our way. And at the end, we were able to sit down at Tim Hortons and catch a visit. You know, they're great at telling you they love you. You know, I love you, Jenny. It's so good to see you. And, you know, when you actually know them on a deeper level, below the layers that they often put on the front of, you know, the tough exterior is really soft, gentle, compassionate human beings. So if you could leave it on there, leave that slide where it is. But I'd like to unpack a few Bible passages that are give examples of either a lack of justice, mercy, and humility, or examples of justice, mercy, and humility. So I'm going to ask if I can get some volunteers. Is there somebody who could read from Matthew 2? And then maybe somebody else can begin looking up Matthew 25. Can you put your hand up if you can look up Matthew 2? Okay, Ian, and then Matthew 25, Colleen. Mark 10, 35. Is someone who can look up Mark 10? Okay, got back there? Okay, John 8, how about John? You cover John? Okay, good. And then Luke 23. I just have 2 more. Could someone look up Luke 23? Okay, and then lastly, Matthew 3. Anyone from this area? Do you guys got a Bible nearby? Matthew 3. Okay, you got that covered? Okay, awesome. Okay, so Matthew 2. Who had Matthew 2? Oh, yeah, okay. So verse 1 to 8 and then 16. Okay. So Herod's in power. He's feeling threatened. He tries to hunt Jesus down. He can't find him, so he kills off every boy under the age of 2. Is this an issue of justice, mercy, humility? Which one? Justice? Those little babies did not deserve to be randomly killed. Anything else? Maybe a bit of humility was lacking. Someone who wasn't able to share power. Some leaders aren't threatened by another strong leader. They actually see the strengths. They can see the strengths in somebody else's skills and what that person's bringing. And other people want to maintain all of the control. And so, Matthew 25, 41 to 46. Carrie touched on this already. So which of those, justice, mercy, and humility, was lacking? Mm-hmm. Mercy. So there's people with needs in front of them. Whether they're deserving or undeserving, they were not shown mercy. How about Mark 10, 35 to 45? Who has? Yeah, okay. So the disciples are wanting to kind of reserve the spot of being on Jesus' right and left in heaven. Kind of like calling shotgun in a car. Have you ever seen kids race for the front seat? You can have some pretty big battles over that front passenger seat. What was this an issue of? Justice, mercy, humility? Humility. Mm-hmm. Okay, so John 8, 1 to 11. Okay, so is that justice, mercy, humility? Justice and mercy. I mean, the guys who wanted to stone her had also sinned. They were just deciding that her sin was, I guess, a worse sin than their sin. So as soon as Jesus said, anyone without sin can throw the first stone, they all walked away. So if we were looking at it from a manner of being honest, fairer and honest about our own sin, then Jesus did the just thing of not singling out her for her sin and not acknowledging that the others there had also had sin. But you're right. In terms of mercy, you know, she had, her actions did have, you know, would have some consequences, and yet Jesus extended mercy to her. Luke 23:39-43. So was that justice, mercy, or humility? Yeah, Jesus led a life of no sin. He was being killed unjustly. The other men were being killed for things they had done, and yet Jesus still forgave him when he reached out, the one criminal that reached out and asked him to remember him. Okay, the last one is Matthew 3. 4-6, and then 11, and then 13-15. I'll start with 4-6. Okay, and then verse 11, okay, and then 13-15. So was that justice, mercy, humility? John saying, I'm not worthy to even untie his sandals. And then when Jesus does come, he says, I should be baptized by you. Why are you asking me? Humility. Yeah. So if we can go down to two more slides, down to Inner Hope's demographic. Close to 90% of the core individuals that we serve through our main programs and the home, and those we track with on a weekly, biweekly, monthly basis, close to 90% are Indigenous here in Canada. About two-thirds, 63% or more, live in subsidized housing. So that's like BC Housing, Native Housing, or like a shelter or something that's like low income. 62% or more have had an immediate family member who's spent time in jail. That's either a parent or a sibling. 42% or more have spent time under government care, either in a foster home, youth housing, residential school, or some kind of respite arrangement. And you might be thinking, well, like, why? Why? We often say, like, why are these people in this situation? You know, why is it so challenging? For our Indigenous people, I'd like to kind of give a bit of a history here in BC, and let's look at this through the lens of justice, mercy, and humility. So if we can go to the next slide, the impacts of colonization in BC. I don't know if you realize, but in 1862, a boat of colonizers from the U.S. arrived in Victoria carrying smallpox. So at the time, there were a lot of Indigenous people that had come down the coast to trade that were camped around Victoria. And quarantined, there was, whether or not there was not enough vaccinations available, the decision was to quarantine all the Europeans, and very few Indigenous people were vaccinated. But not only that, they understood at the time that you can isolate people create these quarantines so that it won't spread. But instead, there was some decisions that were made that led to intentionally spreading the smallpox among the Indigenous people of BC. One person from Mennonite Central Committee, MCC, that's been working in reconciliation said actually some of the indigenous camps were burnt down after 2 weeks of the smallpox being brought into that camp so that they would have to move to other camps in spreading the disease to the next camp. Eventually, a decision was made to tell them they all had to go back to their home communities, which were up the coast, bringing smallpox all the way up BC's coast. And that year, approximately half of BC's West Coast Indigenous population died in 1862. So the beginning of colonization on the coast here of BC for our Indigenous people was death. Then there was the displacement and relocation of Indigenous people onto reserves in the mid to late 1800s, which led to a loss of livelihood and a dependence on the Canadian government. I'm not sure if you've been to public events. Nowadays, it's very common for an acknowledgement of the territory in a public event. So it's something like, you know, I acknowledge that we are on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Squamish Nations. Do you understand what the word unceded territory means? What that means is, in the rest of Canada, there were treaties. So the government made a treaty with the native people, an agreement for the land. It was signed. Now, sometimes it was signed by chiefs who didn't read English, and we don't know if they actually understood it all, and it was sometimes signed with an X. But there were treaties where the government committed to pay a certain fee for the land, to give them maybe annual, like, for, you know, $10 a year, which back in the 1800s, meant something, but today when they bring a suitcase with $10 bills so that every adult gets their $10, it kind of doesn't really have the same value. But I lived on reserve, and so when Treaty Day happened and everybody signed that they received their $10, I was like, are you serious? And the kids got five, so I was like, wow, that's really interesting. But, you know, or maybe it was twine or bullets, you know, fishing, hunting rights. So in Alberta, there's Treaty 6, 7, and 8. I lived on Treaty 8, and the whole province of Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, they all have, all of those lands have treaties with the Indigenous people. So they are on reserves, but there was at some point a treaty arrangement. The majority of BC never signed treaties. So by the time BC was being settled, people were just moved onto reserves with no treaty agreement. And so there is part of Vancouver Island and a little part of the north, and then Nisga in the north signed a treaty, I think, in the 1980s, and there's now treaties being made now, like 152 years later, for the lands here in BC. But BC's an anomaly in Canada in that treaties were not signed for most of the land here. It was, they were just mandated onto reserves. And then from 1861 to 1884 in BC, Indigenous children were removed from their families and put into residential school. So the last residential school to close in the Lower Mainland was in Mission in 1984, and that was St. Mary's Institution. And I know of many of the families that we support who had parents and grandparents that were in St. Mary's residential schools. So I would just like to kind of reflect on this for a second. Smallpox arriving, prioritizing European settlers for vaccinations, and then sending everyone infected back up north to protecting the region of Victoria at the expense of smallpox being spread all the way up the coast of BC. Was that justice, mercy, humility? Injustice, lack of mercy, lack of humility. Which one? All three. It was, for one, deciding that the people who had the power or who had the vaccinations decided that some people were more deserving or more worthy of their lives than others. And those decisions impacted And then the displacement and relocation. So indigenous people have been on this land for hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of years, and being put onto reserve systems here in BC with no formal agreement, without these nations willingly releasing their lands. Was that justice, mercy, humility? Injustice. And then deciding that children should be kind of trained to be European Canadian and to fit into society now, and that the church the government could better raise these children, and we should implement a system where all 5 to 18-year-old Indigenous children would get removed from their families. Justice, mercy, humility. So we have some lasting impacts. If you can go to the next slide. Currently, in British Columbia, 63% of children and youth in the foster care system last year were Indigenous, even though they make up about 6% of the population. In 2016 to 2017, the Department of Justice in Canada reported that 30% of male inmates in BC were Indigenous and 45% of female inmates in BC were Indigenous, even though the Indigenous adult population is only about 4% of our BC population. Can any of you see a correlation between the injustices that started in the 1800s and continued throughout most of the 1900s? And where families are at and individuals are at today in their ability to function? These are things that will take generations to heal. And so when our Canadian government did the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, I think it was like 2012 to 2016, they came across the country and held forums to allow the stories to be told of what individuals went through in the residential schools, to collect the truth of what happened, and then begin some reconciliation. And in the end, there was, I believe, thousands of stories collected, and there were 96 calls to action that a committee of Indigenous leaders created, calling on change and asking that all Canadians be part of these calls to action, calls for change, so that we can begin to see justice happen for our Indigenous people, mercy happen, humility happen in our relationships. So Inner Hope has chosen two calls to action. They're on our website. If we can go to the next slide. One call to action is that we call upon the federal, provincial, territorial, and Aboriginal governments to commit to reducing the number of Aboriginal children in care, so foster care, by providing adequate resources to enable Aboriginal communities and child welfare organizations to keep Aboriginal families together where it is safe to do so, and to keep children in culturally appropriate environments, regardless of where they reside. So with over 40% of Inner Hope's core young individuals that we're serving having been at some point in care, we have a lot of vulnerable families. And so what we're doing is we're saying we want to support relatives to become caregivers for their children in care. So when it's not possible for them to live with a parent, maybe we can help advocate for an aunt or someone in the family to have the supports to get them. Recently, I actually went to court with one of our with a gal to help her gain custody of her 9-year-old niece who was in foster care. Having holiday gatherings and community events where whole extended families can come. We did a summer barbecue and we saw 3 generations of some families come. So creating times where people, where these families can have, can come together. A lot of times agencies focus on just a youth or just a child, and the parent is left out. And when a parent's already struggling to parent, they need chances to create good experiences with their child together, to have the supports and role modeling and shared experiences together. And so being able to have events where parents and children come together. With our Boundless Mentoring Program, encouraging mentors or our coordinator to get to know the parents, to partner with the parents when there are challenges. And in the home that we have, modeling healthy boundaries and routine and building community with the goal that the young people in our home would gain the skills to break the cycles and be able to create healthy, stable homes where they can raise their children and gain those skills. So that the first call to action is related to supporting families to be able to stay together or have appropriate housing situations when they can't. And the other call to action is we call upon federal, provincial, territorial governments to commit to eliminating the over-representation of Aboriginal people in custody over the next decade. So with over half of our individuals in the Corps having had an immediate family member in jail, we know that there's a chance for these young people to break that cycle and to not end up in the prison system. And so providing social events and activities where they can socialize in supervised settings with adults who will, a Saturday evening games night where they can be out playing board games and until 11 or 12 at night, just, you know, day outings, hiking, or, you know, things like that on the weekends, or just connecting them with adult role models who can be a support and model a healthy lifestyle. And also supporting youth in dealing with their pain, learning how to control their anger, and avoiding a lifestyle of addiction so that they're not caught in these destructive cycles. So finally, our vision is youth and families equipped to live healthy lives and empower the next generation. A few years ago, we reflected on InterHope's mission, vision, and values, and we gathered youth and parents together to give input in what they felt was, just input on our vision, mission, and values. And for the vision, they said, multiple parents said, I don't want my children to have to go through what I went through. And that's why we ended our vision statement with empowering the next generation. And in 3 John 1:12, it says, Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you. And our desire at Inner Hope is that by God's grace, more and more of these young people and these families would be able to enjoy good health and have meaningful relationships with one another. And I believe that God created each one with unique gifts and talents and abilities. I believe that he created their culture in his image. And we all have broken areas, but we all, the justice reminds us that we all share the same worth and dignity. So that is a bit of a snapshot of Inner Hope today. I am so thankful for Mountain View and for riding this journey with us. I feel like every year we learn more about the challenges in our city, about the challenges, about the history that has led to where we're at with some of these social challenges. And I just really thank you for partnering with us as well, financially as a church and also individuals who are coming alongside, because I do believe that you are fulfilling God's call, that when you maybe aren't in relationship with some of these people who are really still suffering impacts of injustice, that you can't, your support is helping us address some of these systemic challenges in our country. God talked about, you know, the principalities and powers. So I just, in terms of the Ride for Refuge, we do have a team captain is Ian. Once again, we thank you so much. And Carrie, who's on our board, is also on the team already. So either of them would be able to help you figure out how to sign up if you're interested in riding or walking. So you can ride 10K, 25K, or 50 kilometers to raise money for Inner Hope, or you could walk 5 kilometers. This event is really well run. Any of you who did it last year, you know, could spread the word, but it's really safe. They've marked the routes very clearly. They even have police on main corners to ensuring that traffic is contained. There's a snack halfway through, a water break. There's safety people biking around looking for anybody who has a broken bike or anyone who might have fallen and needs attending to. They have a lunch after, like a full like chicken dinner. You know, like it's pretty amazing event. So if you'd like to join, or if you'd like to sponsor one of the riders, there is, I have these cards with me that have a website of where to go to get information on how to sign up or how to sponsor one of your riders. And we just love to have a big group out again from Mountain View. And I just want to thank you again. And really, I do believe that God is at work. And we're going to continue to hear more and more stories of transformation. I have a young girl who's been living with me for a year now, and her dad was just accepted into Bible school, Pacific Lake Bible School, in September, and is moving from his recovery house into the dorms of a Bible school on September 4th. And so we are seeing some pretty remarkable things happening, and it's, so I just want to thank you again.